Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We are so glad to be with you. It's very chilly outside today here in St. Louis and feels very much so like the Christmas season. We have been talking this weekend or this week so far about the food drive that we did and making sure that we do everything we can this week to push that generosity that we can have from our community to the St. Louis Area Food Bank. We raised over $7,000 yesterday, filled up all the bins at Ruler Foods, but we still have the opportunity for you to donate. If you go to the description of the Annie Fry YouTube live broadcast right now, you can find that. Let's get to our friend Tyrus.
You're becoming like my most stable relationship.
Enough said.
Tyrus, welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Are you having a good Christmas season so far? We started off on a light note.
As far as my Grinchdom goes, it's right on pace with every other year.
Are you a Grinch?
Oh, I'm a huge Grinch.
What makes you Grinchy about the holiday season?
Grinch is the most honest Christmas. It's about, I hate packages and presents and the commercialism. I mean, that's what the Grinch represents.
Okay.
You know, I'm more about, you know, instead of getting every color or a new iPhone every year, just get one thing, you know, because the Grinch was an environmentalist. Because all he was really, his message was, all your stuff that you buy ends up junk.
Yeah.
And, you know, in his garbage, and he is, you know, and so, you know, there's a good point to that. There's a lot we can learn from the Grinch, you know.
I kind of like that thought. I'm not really a big Grinch. I don't like, who's your favorite Grinch in the movies?
Everyone's so into Santa Claus. I mean, no respect for boundaries, you know. Flies in at night when everyone's sleeping, walks around the house like he owns the place, eats your food, never a thank you note, you know, out makes dad look bad. Like, I'm just not a fan.
Tyrus, have you ever dressed up in matching pajamas with your family with your name on them?
No, I'm a man. I play outside.
Okay, Ryan does it all the time, not even at Christmas.
I wasn't asking for myself. I was just asking whether you had.
No, that's above my pay grade.
So, Tyrus, let me ask you this. What's your favorite version of the Grinch? Are you a Jim Carrey guy, or are you just straight up Dr. Seuss?
Jim Carrey. Nailed it. The classic one is Jim Carrey. That's it.
My favorite Christmas movie is It's a Wonderful Life. Do you like that one?
No, it's Die Hard and the Grinch.
Die Hard? Oh, we're going to do that. I watched Die
Hard. You don't want to go there with me. I just had to. I mean, if you do, I'm just letting you know. I will go full regalia on social media. You don't want to end up like Glenn Jacobs, the mayor of Tennessee, who's caught the wrath of his refusing to accept Die Hard as a Christmas movie.
Everybody has their line. This is yours.
You know, if Christmas don't start till Hans Gruber falls. Sorry.
Has that happened for you? I watched it for the very first time last year, opening presents. It's the first time I ever saw Die Hard. Only to find out if it was a Christmas movie or not.
And it is.
Just go ahead. Just do it.
No, I don't like the movie enough to defend it. I'm not, especially against Tyrus. Are you kidding me?
Wait. You don't even like it?
Oh, boy. See, look what you did, Ryan. Listen.
How many years have I been coming on this show? I've been living a lie.
The movie, if I'd have seen it when it was made, it's just taking it out of the decade with which a movie like that is originally intended and comparing it to the action movies of today.
You can say the same thing about me. So.
Okay. Greg Gutfeld, we find out that he is a father. That's pretty exciting. You guys have been pulling double duty on the Gutfeld show. And I got to say, it's been one, in my opinion, one of the key things throughout the course of 2025 or 2024 and the election, but now going into 2025, that has really affected the culture of politics. What do you think wrapping up the year right now with that show, with the strong cast that you guys have of people who fill those chairs every night? What do you think about the impact the Gutfeld show has had?
I think it's good that people got back to just laughing and having a good time. I think it's good that people stopped listening to negativity. Even if we disagree with someone, it's jokes. And we never really go that far. We don't go after anybody. We do call out BS when we see it. But at the end of the day, you got to be able to make fun of yourself. And I'm pretty good at making fun of myself. So it's just have fun. And I think the American people like that. It's nice to see people can laugh and tell people what they like to watch without being shunned or hissed at. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of fun to watch it come full circle. Now we get guests, you know, all from all aisles and spectrums and stuff. I had Undertaker and Kane on, and that was kind of cool, you know. And we're starting to get more and more people that maybe lean a little left that want to come on the show, and mm-hmm. so it's good, you know.
I think that that's going to be one of the things I'm most interested in going into when Donald Trump becomes a president, because Trump continues to say this too. He's like, people actually like me now. I'm more popular than I've ever been. I would think that Gutfeld would be a beneficiary of that, as people have obviously tuned into your show. I'm watching Jimmy Kimmel handle the wake of the election results is not even entertaining for me to watch. It's so depressingly sad.
No, it's sad. It's selfish, arrogant. And here's the thing. When President Trump lost the election in the previous one, I don't remember crying on TV. I think I would remember that. I would think that would be a clip that would surface. I don't remember complaining. We just went on and started making fun of the next, you know. It wasn't worth, because at the end of the day, who you vote for is not, you're not always going to get what you want. And for me to go on there and to cry and complain to people, watch and look to me, because whether you like it or not, there's certain people that watch you on TV and they trust your judgment and they think you know things they don't. And to act like a child when you don't get your way, or, you know, try to push really irresponsible narratives, is just a bad thing. I don't think I never thought Kimmel was a super funny guy. I thought he was like in football, I would call him a game manager. He was on a big network and he got all the big stars. And here's the thing. It's not enough to have celebrities on anymore. Mm-hmm. This election proved that and you're making woke movies and a lot of these celebrities who went out of their way and took money to endorse and things like that, I think they're going to have a hard time getting people to watch them on movies, because they've alienated half the country, and I'd say even more than that. And the fact that when you don't get your way, to double down and make it worse, I mean, I don't see where Kimmel goes with this. I don't see how he comes back from this. ABC in itself, they would have to have a complete overhaul. And instead, unfortunately, there's going to be a few, like what's left, some of the opinion people on MSNBC and things like that. They'd rather, like, I don't know how to tell them this. I'm not a captain, but the Titanic sunk. And it's not coming back, you know.
Yeah.
No matter what they do, President Trump got his 2 terms. He brought the country together. He has people on his staff from all sides of the aisle, friends, foes, you name it. If he thinks it can help the country, he's like, come on in. He even sat down with people who called him Hitler and lied, you know, and pushed the whole Joe Biden was so, you know, Joe and Meek and all that stuff. And he's willing to sit at the table with anyone if you have good ideas. And instead of taking that moment, Kimmel would continue to push things that just aren't true.
Mm-hmm.
So shame on him. And I don't think, like I said, I can't remember the last time one of my buddies was like, yo, I heard this joke on the Kimmel show.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just not happening. But, you know, good for us.
Sure. Yeah, I think Gutfeld's been a huge beneficiary of the downward spiral of these more predictable people on the networks. One of the things I did see Kimmel, and my consumption of him is when he does something particularly unfunny and absurd, usually it makes its way through X, but he was going through and reading some of those conversations that his producers were having. These people who are obsessing over this murderer, he's a suspect, of course, in the murder of the United Healthcare CEO. The dehumanization of Brian Thompson in the wake of that you know, broad daylight shooting that took place in New York City, and the leftist fawning over this suspect. What do you make of all of that?
Well, first of all, not only is a murderer, he's a coward. Shooting a guy, shooting someone in the back is about the lowest thing you could possibly ever do. There was never, even in the West, there was certain levels of it. And I guess it's fun when you live a nice life and no one in your family's ever been shot or killed, murdered like that. So again, these unaffected troll cowboys whose lives are so good that they can, these are the same people that say we're all going to jail and get roundup camps. They just say things for attention. And again, I think if anyone were to glorify a murderer who has a TV show,
shouldn't be on TV anymore. At some point, you know, there was certain decorum and rules on television that were there for a reason. And for someone, it'd be like someone coming out saying, well, Charles Manson had great poems. You would be like, excuse me?
Yeah.
You know, oh, he's good looking. What does that say about you? I think all of these people who have done these things eventually are going to want jobs somewhere. And this stuff is going to come back to bite them on the butt pretty good. It's sad. It also shows how spoiled and out of the loop people are, you know, to make these comments like, oh, he did this and that, and then to double down and try to back it up. And I think it's funny because they don't even have the guts, most of them, to really say it with convention. Like that one, I don't know why anyone gives her an interview. I'm not even going to say her name, but Libs of TikTok have a blast with her. You know, she felt joy and then tried to like clean it up. You know, it's just funny, sad to me that they take these takes thinking that the average person thinks that a good idea. But I'll tell you what, for a lot of the misinformation that they spread and lies that they spread and telling people that the Nazi's over and there's never going to be an election again and all these things, if somebody took what they said and to heart and ended up costing them a job or hurting their life, and if they decided to seek retribution against them, do you think they'd be cheering? No, they wouldn't. They'd be screaming, it's unfair, I don't feel safe. Like, they're the first ones to cry about safe spaces and stuff.
Yeah.
And the man is shot in cold blood. I don't see why we know. I'm the same thing. I don't want to know his name. And again, this is the media that what bothers me. Don't give this guy his name. He's a murderer. You know, like, make it about the victims, but they just don't do it. The same thing with shootings and stuff. Although it is getting better where they won't, you know, put the guy's face up, but this guy's face has been up 24/7. And then, of course, we just have a lot of attention-seeking people who don't have much to do on their times, and they think they're so rebellious and so cool backing a murderer. But, you know, if it ever happened to you, one of your family members, I don't think you would be doing the same thing.
Yeah, I just think about
that. That's one of the unfortunate beauties of being an American citizen. You're allowed to sit back in the comfort of your home and your gated community and say things like defund the police and good for him, and until it happens to you.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's complete outrage. You know, it's like the BLM leader, or, you know, they wanted to defund the police and all that stuff, and then her U-Haul got stolen, and then she's upset because they're not doing enough, and they're not doing anything fast enough. So it's always to me, be careful, because karma's funny.
No, for sure. I always tell my oldest daughter, karma's only a witch if you are, and I just like take that with you.
Yep.
Last question before we go, those drones, you live in New Jersey or the New York area, I think.
Yeah, I saw them above my house.
Did you?
I saw them above my house. And
what do you think they are?
I watch a lot of Skinwalker's Ranch, so I can't really, you know, I think there's more proof that it's a bunch of aliens just trying to get their reality TV show fixed before they take off to Venus, then I believe that Iran has drones out there. I mean, the fact that Iran would send anything right now, given the fact that they are a conversation away from not existing anymore, with Israel basically plucking their feathers like a chicken. You know what I'm saying? They have no air defense. You know, they're at the will of Israel to be existing as a country right now. For them to send off drones, I think you might want to. I don't know what is what, but for me, I'm leaning more towards, it's more like Skinwalker Ranch. They say it's drones, but they seem to be flying higher than the helicopters that were flying around looking at them.
Yeah,
they're definitely not within a gunshot. They're pretty high up there.
But you've seen them with your own eyes.
Yep. Yep. My daughter and my wife were on the third floor. They were looking at him, taking pictures and videos and stuff. And you know, of course, then my daughter was like, I think they said hello. So that's why that was on video. So
they're probably
I'm not
here to see
that.
Georgie. That's probably what's going on here right now.
Well, and they're not taking me. I'm not going to fit in the ship. So, you know, nothing more embarrassing than being beamed up by an alien and your shoulders are stuck in the port. You know, then they got to put me back. you know, it's a bad look for everyone. So
it's a great self-defense, though, when you think about it, when you put it that way. I think yeah, maybe some envy there.
It's a big one. we don't have the tech for that yet, sir.
Tyrus, we love you. Thanks for being with us today.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, especially this time. We appreciate you. That's like a Family Guy episode or something.
That actually sounds like The Simpsons. Like Homer gets stuck getting beamed on.
Belly.
I wonder if I've actually seen that.
Tyrus says, it's a big one.
Oh, no, it's a big
We're
one.
We're not prepared.
The hole's not big enough.
We got to write this mothership and get Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg on when we come back. It's always great to have Tyrus on. Always great. We're going to make that a short video and make sure we tweet it at Tyrus and see if he wants everybody else to hear what he just said. I don't know. Sometimes he says those things on here, and he said it last night on Gutfeld. I didn't get a chance to watch it last night, but he's great. Let's take a quick break. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg next.
The foreign policy of the current administration, the Biden administration, has been pretty disastrous, certainly in that part of the world. There's a lot of mayhem that has ensued that would never have happened under President Trump's hand and watch. I don't think President Biden can take credit for anything happening over there. It's a great development to have Assad, a brutal dictator, taken down out of his position. But we watch with careful anticipation about what happens and develops there next.
Speaker Johnson reacting to the foreign policy we've been watching flow out of the Biden administration for the last near 4 years. And I think you and I both know that it's going to look a lot different when Donald Trump is in charge. And the question a lot of people are asking themselves is, have we already seen the anticipation of Donald Trump from a foreign policy standpoint, being the president-elect? Watching President Trump on the world stage with the reopening of the cathedral at Notre Dame was a pretty significant event to take in. And I thought it was pretty amazing to see world leaders, including, of course, Emmanuel Macron, just very eager to talk to him, work with him. We've seen it with Justin Trudeau. We've heard about his conversations with Mexico. We've watched Donald Trump not yet assume the Oval Office, not yet take the oath of office, but it seems as though those world leaders see him as somebody who is going to be an active participant and a changer of expectations of America's relationship with the rest of those foreign countries. Let's talk to a man who knows all about it and is going to be a part of it. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg joins us once again, former National Security Advisor to the Trump administration and co-chair of the Center for American Security at America First Policy Institute. General Kellogg, thank you for coming back on the show with us. Such an honor to have you back here.
Thanks, Annie. It's great to be with you. It always is. How you doing? All right?
Well, we're doing okay. The Christmas season is upon us, and we say this with regularity with many of the guests that we have on. It's just a little easier to find yourself smiling throughout the day post-election with Donald Trump having won that election. You certainly are going to have an important role with this administration. How do you feel the president-elect is doing so far with this transition, and how is the world reacting?
Yeah, it's a great question, Annie. I think the world is reacting as I honestly thought they would, with one, a little bit of relief, and the relief in the fact that you have somebody who is a proven leader, because everybody kind of knows who he is and what he has done, and there's going to be some stability back in the world and some very, very, what I think, positive leadership. And I think the world sees that. I see it as well. And I think the American people see it, too. That's the reason why I was not surprised about how the victory turned out. I mean, we were pretty confident during the campaign, in the late stages, that we were going to do quite well, especially in the swing states, and it turned out. So I think it's going to go good, and I think there's a lot of good things that are going to happen. And I'm very confident that this is just the start of it. And, you know, I was asked a question about a year ago. What happens if Trump wins? When will the change occur? 20 January, 21, 22 January? No, it's going to happen on the 6th of November. And I think I've been proven right that the world's kind of adjusted itself to his winning and what he's doing. So I feel pretty good about it. I think we should all feel pretty confident about it. I think good things are in store for America.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. That's been my very novice observation as well. Interesting to watch President Trump on a national stage at the reopening of the cathedral at Notre Dame, be around some of these European world leaders. And there just seemed to be a general welcome towards Donald Trump that, I don't know, we've spent 4 years hearing that he's the worst man to walk the face of the earth. And then to see people welcome him in, and even the first lady sitting next to him not showing great disdain for him. Is the president poised to have an effect on his ability to, relate with the rest of the world, but also domestically in a better position now than maybe he would have even been had he won re-election in 2020?
Yeah, you know, I think he has a better opportunity to change than he did if he'd won back-to-back victories in a presidential election. I think it's actually was good for America that he lost that election, and then he's coming back on this time because I think America realized, okay, we need a major reset. I think the pendulum swung so far to the left that America just said, whoa, wait a second. We didn't want it to go this far. Mm-hmm. And they realized kind of who he is as a person. And I think you see that when he was greeted in Notre Dame, that he went there and people responded to that in a very, very positive way because they know who he is. You know, I've said this before, Annie. I know President Trump from being with him from 2015 on. I know that he... basically what I would call the private Trump. And everybody had it so wrong that looked at it externally that didn't really know him. I said, you missed some of the qualities about a Donald J. Trump. And I was pretty basic, and I've said this publicly. And I think I said, I'd ask your listeners to think about it this way. I said, you know, Donald J. Trump has been married 3 times. His first wife, unfortunately, has passed away, Ivana. But he's had 5 children. From 3 different marriages, all of the children adore him. And I've seen that. They just adore him, as does his, obviously his current wife and his previous wives as well. Tell me a family that's like that. Even the Reagan family wasn't like that. You know, Michael Reagan didn't like his dad at all. So he said, maybe there's something about this family that you're missing. Maybe there's something about Donald J. Trump that you're missing on the personal side. And I think the personal leaders have seen that. When he's a tough man. There's no doubt about it, he's a tough man. And he's a very demanding man, no doubt about that. But he's also got a pretty darn good heart. And I've seen that personally. And sometimes he doesn't want, and you and I have talked about this on a previous show, sometimes he doesn't want to show it, but it comes through. And I've seen that on a very personal level when he's acted with soldiers, when he's traveled to see soldiers, when he's traveled to be with people. He's got an incredibly common touch, which I think speaks well of him. And I say that, obviously it sounds partisan, and it is. But I said, I think this time a lot of people in America saw that, but it took that shooting in Butler, Pennsylvania, for them to realize the kind of guy he was when he stood up and said, fight, 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 and wasn't backing down, didn't cower, didn't fall to the ground, didn't, rush to the car. He stood up because we didn't know, was there another shooter, second shooter, third shooter, fourth shooter? And I think Americans saw that, and they said, well, maybe we misread this guy. And then on the election, I think on 5 November, I think America said, all right, let's give this guy a chance. And I think now that everybody's kind of saying, okay, maybe we had him, some of us had this guy wrong. Let's see what he does. And I think it's going to turn out very well. I think, honestly, I've said this, been on the campaign trail. I think we're ready for a real golden age again. That's very pro-American. That's American first. And I think we're going to feel really good about being an American again.
Oh, it's such a positive and strong endorsement for President Trump. We're speaking with General Keith Kellogg here on the Annie Frye Show. I think of the way you're describing him and his toughness, and, you know, he could be a rigid person, but he also understands how to bend to make a good deal for America. All of that is summed up to me as respect. He commands respect from people. And that is something that I am presuming will be on behalf of America, that the respect for America, I don't know if it's too broad of a statement to say that people will respect America again, but there's definitely a different presence between the Biden administration on a foreign policy level and the Trump administration. Does the world begin to look at America differently when Trump is the president?
Absolutely. I think it's going to happen. It's happening already. when you see the people that are reaching out to him, adversaries and allies as well, but also the kind of the way the world is starting to settle itself in. And you're starting to see people starting to kind of settle and say, okay, we know America can be tough. This is where they want to be tough. You've got a very, very tough commander in chief. And I think you're going to see that. You know, I'm going to make a very bold prediction. I think you're going to see peace in the Middle East within the first 6 months. Yeah. I think you're going to see peace in Ukraine and Russia to a degree within the first 6 months. That's going to quiet down. I think the issue on immigration is going to be addressed immediately. I think you're going to see business confidence go way up. You're going to see a lot of things happen that are going to make Americans feel pretty good about themselves. I had a senator, a U.S. senator, I was at a lunch with him yesterday, and he said, you know, here's something really amazing. When he said it, I had to step back for a second and said, well, he may be right. He said the 2026 election will be determined in the summer of 2025. And I said, okay, I think I understand. He said, because if you make a positive national statement that you've got inflation under control, the economics, if you've got immigration under control, if you've got deterrence and stability under control globally, and it's all based on American leadership, that is going to carry forward. It was in a very perceptive comment, and I think he's right, but I think you're going to see that. That's Kellogg's prediction. Of course, don't have me on if I'm wrong, though.
Oh, we'll have you back. Everyone's allowed to make mistakes. That's why we keep having you back, because the clarity you're able to provide us is so, there's so much depth to it. I think that you brought up Ukraine and Russia. Of course, we've seen the Middle East have tons of conflict. We're watching Syria really transform into something else. Specific to Ukraine, though, it's become such a political football to talk about Ukraine. And, you know, we've had military mm-hmm. people come on here who do advocate for sense in American involvement in that conflict. What is a reasonable, rational, objective expectation for the American taxpayer and voter to look at Ukraine and Russia, the conflict that exists there, and the money that's being sent?
Yeah, what if I said to you right now, no more American money is going to be spent in Ukraine? Is that a positive statement? And I think the answer, and it's rhetorical, the answer is yes. Because there's an ability. You know, Congress passed a thing called the Repo Act last year. And what that means is, and when I was in business, we used to call it OPM, other people's money. And the Repo Act basically used frozen Russian assets, billions of dollars, to pay for, and they're allowed to do so because the UN General Assembly, one week after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, declared Russia to be an aggressor state. Because they were declared an aggressor state, you can take certain economic actions. So use frozen Russian sovereign assets in the interest thereof and have them pay for the war. You can do that. So you can say to Americans, you're not going to spend another dollar there. None. So all of a sudden they go, oh, you mean we actually can do that? They said, oh, absolutely. And that's the reason why the law was passed. So let's just say no American money is being spent there. We're going to use American influence. We're going to basically Europeanize the war, meaning more and more European influence. Get them more involved in it. Is that going to be a positive sign? Is that going to help? I think it will.
Yeah.
And if we say that to the American people, they're going to go, oh, I kind of get this one now. And I would venture to say that's kind of an approach we're going to take and see how it plays, because things are in place to do that. And I would, you know, I ask your audience, look, just look it up. Go Google the Repo Act that was just passed by Congress a few months ago and the ability to take Russian sovereign assets to pay for the war. It's not $100 million. It's billions of dollars. And I said, oh, so we don't have to pay any more American money? Nope.
That sounds good.
No American lives, no American money. And it's there. It's the ability to do it. I don't know why, honestly, this administration didn't do that when they had the opportunity to do it. I just don't understand it. But there's an opportunity to do something a little bit different. And I would say, let's just approach the world a little bit differently. Whether you like the Russians or not, you know, the fact of the matter is, it is always good to talk to adversary states. And people talk about, you know, as an example, people talk about, you hear them talking about, well, the Ukrainians fired, you know, missiles, American-made missiles into Russia. You know, how about the real escalation that nobody talks about? How about the fact that Russia has escalated by bringing a third country or second country physically into the ground? Third country because Iranian stuff is coming in there. But North Korean troops, it's the first time that's ever happened. That North Korean troops, that's your escalation. Not the U.S. escalation. And I challenge people to say, look at it rationally. Don't look at it emotionally. How does this work? How we you know, Russia is an it may be an adversary, but we adversary by doctrine is not necessarily an enemy, but an adversary state. How do we deal with them? Because they are a nuclear power. And how do we work with them in a rational way? And Donald Trump can do that. You know, one of the things that there's a great book by Peter Rodman called Presidential Command, and somebody who about multiple presidents. And he said two of the strengths of American presidents when they're successful. One is they do a lot of stuff on intuition because they know how to do stuff. And the second is they personalize it, meaning they reach out and they talk to foreign leaders. You got Joe Biden, who hasn't talked to Putin in 2 years. He hadn't even talked to, you know, really the Saudis almost a year. Trump would reach out to him all the time. You've got to do that as a president. And I think that's what you're going to see. That's how leadership is going to evolve. And I think that's going to make America better and stronger in the world.
You know, what I hear you saying is that the Trump administration is looking to starve Russia in this war economically. And it feels like the Biden principle has been significantly just to subsidize and fund Ukraine. So one of them involves throwing a lot of money at the problem. And the other one involves using the powers and authorities that exist to starve the oppressor in this particular conflict. Is it a fair assessment to say that Joe Biden hasn't been trying to stop the war?
Well, he hasn't at all. He said because there was no grand strategy on how to do it. Because he basically said, you know, we're going to continue to do what we're doing. Well, what you've actually done by doing that, without having an end state, you've put Ukraine in a position of fighting an attrition war. I will tell you historically, in a military way, historically, you never want to get into an attrition war with the Russians. You just don't, because they'll beat you to death with number of manpower. They will absorb 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 casualties. They'll absorb that. Remember, they lost millions in World War II. It's the way they are. So you never want to get to that position. Well, that's where they got to. And that's what the Biden administration did. Said, okay, well, you know, I used to tell people on Capitol Hill, I'd say, you know, what you're telling me now by giving them all this money and equipment, you're willing to give them as much equipment as they can have to the death of every last Ukrainian.
Yeah.
I said, it's reaching a point, it's a demographic issue. You know, do you want to let them, you're basically bleeding them out. You know, I'll go back to what happened in World War One, and the Brits to this day talk about trench warfare in World War One, and they talk about the amount of young men they lost. They still call it the lost generation. Do you want to have another lost generation? And that's what you get in an attrition fight with the Russians. You don't want to go there. So they should have thought of a way to get out of this war, or at least solve this problem. And there's multiple ways to do it, and figure out how to stop it. I mean, this is the longest war in Europe since World War II. The casualties, I mean, look at the casualties of the Ukrainians alone are more than the U.S. casualties in Vietnam and the Korean War combined. Okay, this is just, it's a horrific war. And it's almost, you want to say, that's where President Trump is so right when he says we've got to stop the killing. He's absolutely right. If you want to have a viable nation, you have to.
Wow. Well, I think he's putting the right people in charge to make sure that gets done. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, you are a treasure to have on this show. We're very, very grateful to have a little bit of your time this afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us. Merry Christmas to you. Happy holidays. We appreciate you so much.
Thanks, Annie. Same to you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. It was everything I could do to say you fell victim to one of the classic blunders. Never getting involved in a land war in Asia. But he's so serious and like close to the actual problem. I'm like, if he's not familiar with the Princess Bride, I will never be able to show face to Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg for quoting the Sicilian to him. So I didn't. But I am saying it to you because you guys know me. You know, I don't pretend. Like, the Princess Bride is peak understanding of war strategy for me, which is why we have experts on. Yeah, when you think about the way he's setting this up, and we got to take a break here, but when you think about the way he's explaining the Biden administration strategy versus what the Trump administration strategy is, Trump's going to come in and try to starve off any assets and abilities that the Russians have to continue this type of killing. And Joe Biden's like, just keep writing checks to the Ukrainians, to the point where you hear Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg talking about it in a way that's like, OK, we can do this, but we're going to do it to the last death in Ukraine. Something's got to give. And the American people agreed in November. Thank the Lord. Quick break when we come back. I think Ryan's going to finish up his list of how to be a great Christmas party guest. So you're going to want to stick around for that. I promise you, maybe Ethan will come back in here and we'll have more conversation with him as well, if we're blessed in order to do that. Let's take a quick break. Vote in the YouTube live chat poll. Who's drones? Iran/China, U.S. government, aliens, or something else? Annie Fry YouTube channel. Wiggins back in studio with us next. Ryan, when you go to a party and you're trying to be like the best guest possible, are you the dance starter? Are you the person who's the last one on the floor?
Last one on the floor.
You don't need, why? Why do you wait?
Because I don't want to start the dance. The dance sort of has to call out to me. And once it does, then I respond. But I'm not the one that is going to rile the crowd up. I'm going to come and kind of wow the crowd later.
When they're drunk and they can't tell.
No. This could be early in the
exactly
night.
Exactly what it is.
All right, give us some more of the tips.
All right, more tips for a better Christmas party for yourself or loved ones. The first couple that we went through,
it's just being a good guest.
Yeah, being a good guest. Good guest. Yeah. Just talk, Ryan. Do RSVP. Don't show up empty-handed. Do dress to impress. Don't assume you can bring a plus one, and do arrive fashionably late. Those are the first five. Here's the next ones. Don't hang on your host. Sure.
What?
Say hello to your host when you first arrive, but don't stay attached to his or her hip the whole night.
They need to entertain other people.
Yes, exactly. Next one. Do ditch your phone.
I like that rule.
What if you don't know anybody?
If you're on your phone, you won't know anybody by the time you leave.
But is the point to get to know people? Or do you just go to the party to check the box?
You're asking the wrong girl. I have learned to sit without my phone on the table and just be present. And sometimes I feel like if I saw someone doing that, I'd be like, wow, that person is super confident. I couldn't do that. So I'm like trying to make myself do it. Just like, have you ever gone and sat down and dined alone?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Without your phone on?
No.
And looking on your phone?
No.
Do you?
Regularly? No, but yeah. I have.
Just sit there. Like, if you've ever seen somebody in a restaurant sitting there eating a meal, not needing to be entertained by their phone or accompanied by their phone, it's like, oh, okay. That's what we used to, like, half of our life was like that.
Tell you what I
almost did. But it's not like that anymore. I don't think people can do it.
2 weekends ago, I almost raw-dogged a flight to Florida.
Oh, Ryan.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Why didn't you? Because you're weak?
Why didn't I? Yeah.
You said you almost did.
I'm glad that you always take the positive angle. Why?
Yeah, unlike you.
You almost raw-dogged it, but you failed, did you?
Well, you could almost do a lot of things. Maybe you almost flew the plane, too, but you decided not to. How come?
I did not do that because the plane would not take off.
Door was locked.
No, I just got bored enough at the end that I'm like, okay, I'll do a little work on my phone. But I basically sat there and just kind of hung out. It wasn't a long flight. It was like an hour-and-a-half flight.
Did you keep leaning to the people next to you going, hey?
Hey, I'm raw-dogging.
It's not what you think, guys. It's not what they think, right?
I don't know what you think. You tell me what you think, and I'll tell you whether or not I did that.
Having that conversation.
Don't get sloshed at your next party.
Yeah. Key.
Do thank your host, and don't overstay your welcome.
Don't be early. Don't stay too late.
And don't stay too late.
Which one are you more likely to do?
Stay late.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
No way. You went to the Christmas party to eat toasted raviolis, and then you left as fast as you could.
Well, because I had to go pick up my son, but once I get into conversation.
You were putting T-Ravs in your pockets on the way out the door.
That did not happen. Live in your world. You go live in whatever world you want. I'll just stand over here and say yes.
The weird thing was the cupped marinara in your hand. We'll be right back.
Okay.